Because she can say curse, she can respond. So I would like to call to order the meeting of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee. Would you call the roll?
Trustee Betsy Hill.
Here.
Trustee Kerr.
Here.
Great. And Trish, would you verify that the meeting notice was posted as required?
Yes, the meeting notices were posted.
Okay, the first action item on our agenda, and if I say this slowly enough, Trustee Kerr will be here in time to make a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve, second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Okay, next is our Academic and Student Affairs update, and we are honored to have our esteemed provost here to provide that update.
Good morning. Before you, you have a resolution to accept the recommendation for faculty. There are 10 of them for tenure status. They have met all of the prerequisites for tenure, including teaching, research, and service for the university. It has been vetted through us several layers, including the final approval by Dr. Watson. So I present those names to you.
I think this may be the first time that some board members have voted on tenure recommendations. If you could just describe briefly what that process is, I think it would be helpful.
Okay, starting with the department level. Each department, and really it occurs immediately after each new contract. Let me start with that. So when a new contract has been approved, each department is then responsible for creating departmental application criteria. What that does is it spells out what does a faculty member have to do to be retained. So, and this retention occurs years 1 through 5, and then the 6th year they would go up for tenure. During the sequence of the first 5 years, a faculty member may also request to be promoted from an assistant professor to an associate professor. But all of these, all of this information is spelled out in the department application criteria known as your DAC. As you know, we're currently undergoing the review of a new contract. The previous contract was for 4 years. The one that we're currently working on is also, once approved, will be for 4 years. So by March, if it is approved, the department will be responsible for reviewing the new contract and then adjusting its its DAC to ensure that the faculty are meeting the standards that are required for retention and promotion. In addition to retention and promotion, there are also provisions for professional advancement increases for faculty. And when we begin to look at not only the retention and the promotion and PAI, which is the professional increases, what happens is it starts at a level that you would expect a first-year faculty member who would move to the 2nd year. It starts with standards that we know are not only measurable, but also that the department feels that faculty should be able to meet. And again, it's in all three areas, teaching, research, and service. As the faculty member progresses through the next year and thereafter, it increasingly becomes more difficult. So the standards are increased, the criteria for meeting each of those standards, it increases in difficulty. When the DAC are created, the DACs are created, the department agrees on those DACs. Those DACs then move to the provost, and then receive final approval by the president. So that's basically.
Okay. So each of these individuals has been through that whole process.
Yes.
And each of the departments has met with their the committee that's required to actually recommend that these.
And that's at the department level. Once it leaves the department level, and again, you know, the faculty, they have their peers, they go in, they evaluate them. This is relative to the teaching. Student evaluations are taken in consideration. And all of these items are also weighted as indicated in each of the DAC. From that, when it moves from the department, it then moves to the department chair. So the department chair also writes an evaluation. From the department chair, it moves to the dean. The dean writes an evaluation. And frequently, you know, all of the three tiers that I've just described, for the most part, many times, most often, they are in agreement. It then moves to the last body, the university review board, review body. And that's UPS, University Personnel Committee, UPC. And that committee is comprised of not only a faculty member, maybe representative from that department, but also it has representatives across other colleges. So it maintains its objectivity. That body is the last tier prior to it moving to the provost office, and then lastly to Dr. Watson. So there are a series of steps, and there is an academic personnel calendar that is developed at the beginning of the year. Right now it's posted for those who will be going up for consideration effective September. And again, it would either be for retention, promotion, and of course, for tenure.
Thank you very much. And our concern today is to address the recommendations for granting of tenure. And our what we are required to do is actually, it's part of the motion to approve it. We need to name the individuals who are listed here. So do I have somebody like to make a motion to approve this, the list of candidates for tenure?
Yes, I so move.
All right, well, we need, and those candidates are Carol Jacobs, Robert Lesueur, Elizabeth Reed Osika, Deborah Nelson, Yvonne Patterson, Stephen Rowe, Regina Smith, Gabrielle Toth, Faraz Wooded, Hasmamau Yimmer, and if I've mangled the names,
no, you
I
have.
Do apologize.
No.
I should have practiced them earlier. It's like when you give out diplomas, right? You always hope you're close. Anyway, is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Yes,
you can't. Oh, I'm sorry. Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Yeah. Trustee Kerr does not vote on tenure issues.
I apologize.
No. Now, there's also, we are required to address those individuals who were up for tenure but are not being recommended, and the recommendation is not to grant tenure for Robin Connor Gilbert, King Connie Haley, and Leon Hendricks. Is there a motion to approve the resolution not to grant tenure to these individuals?
Would you like me to explain?
Yes, I do.
First of all, let's begin with Dr. Leon Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks he was scheduled to go up for tenure. He did not submit a portfolio. Thus, he's not eligible for tenure. So that's with Dr. Hendricks. Robin Connor Gilbert and Queen Connie Haley both went up for consideration last year and were denied. They were given a terminal contract last year. What that means is individuals are given one more year after they've been given, once they've been denied. So as a result, this May 18th would be their last day. And it is important that it be noted and approved by the board, because what has happened, and without me giving names, when an individual, let's say they leave and did not submit a portfolio, and they were in their sixth year, and then they just leave the university, and then come back, and then they're asking that those 6 years be considered, and then they just go up for tenure again. No, we need to be able to say, at the time when the personnel action was taken, that individual was not eligible, therefore we have a record of it. And when there is no record, it makes for a case that someone may wish to bring.
So likewise, these individuals did not meet the requirements for tenure last year. The board at that point actually voted to deny
yes.
tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that again this year because their contracts are at an end and they have not met the requirements. Mm-hmm.
But lastly, I don't want to forget about Dr. Sharice Wolf. There was some ambiguous language in the DAC and the contract. And typically, when there's this ambiguity, the faculty member is given additional consideration. So she will be going up again next year, and at that time she will be reconsidered.
And the same process was followed with these candidates as you described
yes.
with the other candidates?
Yes. Okay. Everyone goes through the same process.
Okay. Thank you.
So is there a motion to that the board approve not granting tenure to Robin Connor Gilbert, Queen Connie Haley, and Leon Hendricks?
Move that we approve.
Is there a second?
I second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
And my understanding is that we don't really need to have a board action on Dr. Sharice Wolf.
No, she will go up
again. That would come before us
next year.
Next year. Okay. Thank
you.
I
just wanted to have it in the minutes.
Yep. Very good. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Okay. Next.
The second item is requesting approval by the board for bestowing the title of Professor Emeritus for Dr. Michael Memnaugh. You know, I've known him the short time I've been here at Chicago State, and there is a process for that as well. The process starts at the department level. The department faculty must all be in agreement that this is an honor that should be bestowed upon this individual. And basically, that honor is built around, has this faculty member distinguished himself from everyone else? And this has nothing to do with tenure. This has nothing to do with promotion. He will be retiring in August. Is it August?
August.
But it is a title in the academy that is well recognized. This particular faculty member, he has written millions of dollars and has been awarded those grants. Millions. He has brought millions to this institution. And of course, he's in the Department of Chemistry and Physics. The faculty, everyone, the students love him, and he has a passion for teaching. He's really, he's one of our most exemplary faculty members. In addition, he's well known in the community, and especially in the sciences. His research, he's well published, and as a result of not only his many, many contributions, the department approved it. The department chair wrote a letter, and these are the steps. The dean wrote a letter. I accepted the recommendation, had a discussion with Dr. Watson, who later approved. Therefore, I am now presenting it to the board for your approval, consideration.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
With regards to this gentleman, I must say, in my short time at Chicago State, I have had the pleasure of interacting with him at a number of levels. One, in research, in terms of the numerous research proposals that he's put forth and different research projects, and research that involves our students, which is most important. Secondly, in terms of being a faculty member, teacher, students have a very positive interaction with him. Thirdly, as being a community, a member of the community of Chicago State, he has always brought pride. He has always been a positive force in the community, and he has never brought shame to this university. He is without a doubt a professor's professor.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation to confer the title Professor Emeritus on Dr. Michael Nimna?
I would like to do that, but I also just want to comment that I don't know how this individual, Dr. Nimna, finds enough hours in the day to do what he's done.
He's retired.
So actually, I look forward to having the opportunity to meet this gentleman.
Okay. Really.
And I so move that we grant this gentleman Professor Emeritus status.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Well, thank you.
And please convey our congratulations to the new tenured faculty as well as to, well, actually, we have to have the board meeting. Never mind. We'll do that later.
I'm sure they'll, many of them will be here. Thank you again.
That's good.
Okay. Next on our agenda, Dr. Musial, are you going to come and give us an update on the Higher Learning Commission accreditation process?
I would be happy to. Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to give a very brief overview of the activities of the Higher Learning Commission Steering Committee over the last couple of months and then move on to our action item on core values, vision, and mission. The Steering Committee continues to meet every Friday for 2 to 3 hours, and one of the main things that we accomplished over the last month was to attend the Higher Learning Commission's annual meeting in Chicago. Most of the members of the steering committee, as well as a number of individuals who work on the various criterion committees and subcommittees, also attended. One of the main issues that was discussed at the conference was the proposal, and it's now pretty much a fait accompli, of the Higher Learning Commission to change the criteria under which individual institutions would be judged. For those institutions that are going to go have a self-study visit starting January 1st of 2013. And our scheduled visit was to be in 2012 fall or spring of 2013. The proposed criteria are not yet in any way set in stone. They are to undergo four revisions, perhaps being finalized in February of 2012. This would give us very little time to respond. Keep in mind that all the time that I've been addressing you for the last approximately a year, these criteria committees and subcommittees have been working to understand the criteria as they've been written and to understand how CSU responds to these criteria and has been responding for the last 10 years or 8 years, the 10 years since 2003 up till 2012, 2013. For that reason, we decided in the steering committee, we made the recommendation to Dr. Watson, who has accepted it, that we would prefer to have a fall 2012 visit rather than take our chances with a spring 2013 visit with criteria that we're not quite sure what they're going to be. It doesn't sound there would be a lot of changes, but there would clearly be some. And we don't, like I said, know yet what they're going to be. This process is very, very involved. And, you know, the criterion committees have been thinking along the lines of what their criteria are going to be. Another benefit, of course, of staying with the current criteria is that we can view, you know, several years of other institutions and how they've responded to the criteria, and we can use those basic guides to see what the teams are looking for, to see what a successful report looks like. We would be going completely blind if we were to address these new criteria. We'd be pioneers. Pioneering is sometimes a pretty good thing, but in this particular case, when accreditation is on the line, it's not something that I'm a huge fan of. I think that there's just too much on the line. I'd rather that we go with something that we know. This, of course, forces us to push our timeline back a little bit. We would have been having a visit probably in March of 2013. Our preferred dates now are, our first choice is November 26th of 2012. This would be right after Thanksgiving. The reason we chose this is we still need to have students on campus, and this would be the last week of classes. The previous week being Thanksgiving week would not be appropriate, and so our second choice would be November 12th of 2012, and our third choice would be November 5th. So that's what we're looking for. We will not hear an official, get an official date from the Higher Learning Commission at least till June, because other institutions have until that date to make their choice, and then they will see how many institutions decided to do what we're doing, which is to move over to 2012 fall, and how many wish to stay with the spring. There's no indication yet as to how it's going to pan out. They can't have them all on one side or the other. Another thing we're working on is to publicize our accreditation efforts. Notre Chapman, faculty member in the library, has been just wonderful in convening a group to begin to think about ways of using so many different modern social media to publicize our accreditation efforts, just to let people know that we are undergoing accreditation. It's very, very important. I cannot tell you how important it is. When I look at the previous concerns from, say, 2003, so much of their previous concerns were based on what they learned talking to people, what the team learned when they're talking to people on campus, faculty, students. People have to know accreditation. They have to know what's on the line. So NOTRA just said, why don't we ask the students, because they're the hardest ones to inform. It's harder for us to reach the students. How do we inform the students about this issue? And they were very frank. They said, we want everything. We want Facebook. We want YouTube. We want video. We want just regular posters. We want word of mouth. We want email. But no one thing was going to work for everyone. So we're working on all those things. We're looking at producing very short videos, very short, 30, like commercial spots, just to get the message across. Accreditation is coming. Accreditation is important. We need accreditation. We need to remain accredited with the Higher Learning Commission. We need to have that mantra. It's a mantra. Everybody has to have it on their lips. We are building or equipping an HLC accreditation office in this building, staffing it with a research assistant. Up till now, it's mostly been the committee work, but we need support. There's going to be, over the next year and a half, there's going to be a lot of need for, you know, correspondence to be made quickly and accurately. A lot of data has to be posted to the live text portal so that the criterion committees have access to it. And that that ends my report for the activities of the Higher Learning Commission. I'd like to move on now to the action item on core values, vision, and mission. May I?
Please.
Okay. Does everyone have a copy?
Are there any questions before
yeah.
we...
I have one question.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Is this one on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I don't know if it's working.
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, just a question as far as the campaign for accreditation. Mm-hmm. One suggestion, I don't know if we'll be able to do it or not, but you're familiar with the RAVE program we have, right?
Yes.
Is there any way we could take advantage of that and those numbers and send out accreditation as coming text to students?
We definitely want to use any media that's at our disposal, including the various televisions that are set up, including in the SUB, in the cafeteria. I really have to say I admire, you know, the university's constraint. RAVE is for emergencies,
yeah.
And that is something that the institution has been very, very consistent about. I got three RAVEs in February, I think you did too, when the university was closed, mm-hmm. a bona fide emergency. Mm-hmm. If there is any sort of an emergency, so I'm just telling you what I understand. We certainly thought about it, you know, because we want to put everything on the table. But the reason RAVE is so valuable and the reason people pay attention to it is, of course, because we use the constraint needed to make sure that it is used for emergencies. So I take your suggestion to heart. I mean, I very much want to use everything, but I also want to keep in mind that in order that that channel be understood, that people actually say, oh my gosh, it's a RAVE, they know that it's something they need to read immediately, and it goes to what, email, cell phone. I got mine on the cell phone. So I think we're going to, I think we're going to probably have to hold off on that. But if you have any other suggestions, just send, our email is easy to remember, hlc@csu. Just send us an email if you can think of anything that that we may not have thought of. We're going to try to do posters. Good-sized posters seem to be appropriate. But nothing beats, you know, word of mouth and just getting the word out there, faculty talking to students and that. But
well,
it's okay.
I do understand, like, yeah, the privacy and those issues with RAVE, but definitely if you all could include student government, because okay, they're the ones who pass the word to the student body.
Absolutely.
So they could actually do events and programs to get students right, interested in actually paying attention to it.
Jonathan Parks.
Okay.
Parks is on one of the criterion committees, and so that's our link. And I think he can get that word.
Yeah, but just mention it to him, because student activities is separate from student government,
okay,
so that he knows
okay,
to,
right,
you,
you
know, use the umbrella with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go to mission and values then.
Okay, just a brief history. I first presented these to the board not as an action item, but more as an information item. To you all in the December 2010 meeting. Brief history: in this room and some of the surrounding rooms, a group of about 70 of us, including yourself, Trustee Hill, and many of the individuals who are here, Dr. Watson was also present, and but many of the individuals who are here, including faculty, staff, and administrators, were kind of hunkered down here on a warm couple of summer days to talk about mission, vision, and the core values of the institution. You know, we went in with open minds. The president laid out his vision kind of first thing in the morning, and we kind of took it from there. You know, there were many, many individuals who were heard. There were several rounds of voting that went on, and a tentative draft of these documents were put out to the university community through the fall semester. And I mean, we really beat the bushes. We went to very many offices, colleges. We gave students the opportunity to respond online. We got a lot of feedback, and the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Over 95% of those responding were either supportive, I should say, approved or generally approved these documents. That was December. Since then, there's been another round of discussions. Obviously, when you have enough time to really look at something, you want to make some changes. So some very minor changes were made since then. I want to bring them to your attention so that it's very clear that what you're voting on. So one of the things that was added, we noted that we had entrepreneurship in the vision. And it's very clear that with all the things that are going on campus, and it's clearly very much a part of Dr. Watson's vision, that entrepreneurship is such an important item in the university going forward that it really should be added to the core values as well as the mission. And so you'll see that the word entrepreneurship now appears both, or all three, in the core values. It's the third to last dot, as it was always in the vision. But it is also in the mission, that entrepreneurship is actually the last word in the mission. It says that the last sentence, I hope you all have it, but last sentence in the mission now states that CSU is committed to teaching, research, service, and community development, including social justice, leadership, and entrepreneurship. Okay. Trustee Samuels was interested in having environmental justice added. That has been added to the vision. Okay. And it was really no debate about that. It was just a question of how to word it, but it certainly there was certainly general agreement that should be the case. Another addition that is, I think, significant is a change to the mission statement. The addition, it's the, it's basically the second part of the first sentence. Chicago State University is a public comprehensive university that provides access to higher education for all students, including those who are academically unprepared and economically disadvantaged. The thought there was that, you know, Dr. Watson made it clear that if you read the mission, you know, CSU should come to mind. And over the months, it became clear that if you want the mission to distinguish the university, you have to talk about the situation that we are currently faced, and that it's what we do. It's literally what we do. The mission is the business we're in, and there was a lot of debate about that. I'll tell you that. But it became clear that if you want a mission that someone could hold up and say, yeah, that's Chicago State, and I can build now plans to support that direction, I think it becomes a much stronger statement. And the last change, just the changing the core values to nouns, they were verbs. It didn't really make sense that the values should be verbs, the things that you do. These are things that we value. We value intellectual development. We value creative and innovating thinking and learning, dignity and unique talents of all persons. A couple of things were sliced up a little bit. Lifelong learning became its own dot point, bullet point. But those are the main changes, and they came about through many discussions of the steering committee. And again, we did put it, you may have noticed if you've ever logged on to Career Connect, there was a large right in the middle of Career Connect when you logged in. I said, here's the changes, and you know, contact us if you have any comments on those. So that's what we're proposing to you. That's the reason that at the top it says revised, submitted May 9th, is that we wanted to get you the most up-to-date changes. So,
great. Any comments or questions from board members?
This was extremely well done. When I talked to the president about this, I made it clear that when you read mission statements of universities, you can kind of insert university, right? They're all sort of the same. You get to the same point. So I was clear that I thought we should have some distinguishing adjectives to separate Chicago State, and I think you've done that. I'm looking at some of these words: ethical, community access, economically disadvantaged, social justice. I mean, I think these are perfect. This is extremely well done.
Thank you very much.
It's academically underprepared, which I think is really good, and it's a distinction from unprepared.
No, underprepared. No,
and underprepared is really a strong and important word. So, and I second what Trustee Rozier said.
Thank you.
This is just incredible work. This is really, really good.
I thank you. The whole university, you know, over 500 people gave us some feedback, and it being overwhelmingly positive, we kind of knew we were going the right direction. But I appreciate your vote of confidence.
It's great.
I really can't add much to what Trustee Rozier and Trustee Samuels have said, but I've been teaching strategy, and part of that is mission and goals and values and understanding how they fit with strategy and where you're positioned and where you're trying to go. Mm-hmm. And I had the same concern about all of our previous materials, which it was just motherhood and apple pie and anybody on the face of the earth. And and this is, I read this and I say that just what you said, this is CSU. And so congratulations on the job.
Thank you so much.
Extremely well done.
Yeah, and now we can, if you do approve this, we can really move forward in writing our self-study.
Right. So, therefore, I will entertain a motion to approve the mission,
this is
the
truly
values.
The most exciting thing that I'm signing as chairman.
I think
it really is. I mean, having the next to this is very exciting for me.
You know, I would like to really acknowledge Paul's leadership here. The professor has really taken this and made it a shared governance item, transparency, and we owe you a vote of thanks on this one, and your committee. Yeah, I mean, it was a team effort,
yes.
And the faculty, the staff have really jumped in on this one. So this is truly a Chicago State University mission and vision. I remember when I first came, people were saying, well, what is your vision? What is your mission? And I said, you know, I can't give you the vision for the university. That has to come from the faculty, from the students, from the staff. And Professor that is what has happened. And I really want to thank you for working with all of us and making that happen.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. But again, half my committee is here. I can't take all the credit. Unfortunately, my colleague, Geb Mulugeta, had a pressing family member matter. Otherwise, he would have been here, too. So.
Well, you is meant in a plural sense.
Yes, thank you.
So, I would entertain a motion to approve the resolution with Chicago State University's new values, vision, and mission.
So moved, strongly.
And I second, strongly.
Thank you.
Trustee Hill.
Yes, strongly.
Trustee Rozier.
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Samuels.
Yes.
Trustee Kerr.
Yes.
Too eager.
I thank you very much.
After the board votes later today, which I trust that will happen, I think that hopefully there's going to be a big celebration and announcement and stuff on
Indeed.
Campus.
Right? Indeed. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, the last action item on our agenda is the Child Care Center update. Dr. Gist and Dr. Harris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, I'm Sylvia Gist, Dean of the College of Education, and I'm here for two reasons. Number one is to give you an update on the Child Care Center. And secondly, is to present an action item. So I will start with the update. In July of 2010, the Child Care Center moved to the College of Education. And at that particular time, when the center moved to the College of Education, child care basically involved working with Head Start operations. We have five off-site centers that provide services, and we also have two home care centers that provide services. So that's basically what we have as far as child care center operations are concerned right now. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to extend these operations and bring child care center services or child care services back to campus, but that's in the future or in our future plans. Before I move to the action item, I would like to ask if there are questions about the current operations and the update that I just gave.
What's the proximity of those five off-site centers?
Most of them are, the one that is farthest away is like 40-something in King Drive or that area. There is one 62nd Wabash. I don't remember the exact addresses. I think the addresses are on this. And there is one on, and the others are in the 80s. So they're not very far from campus, but they're not on campus.
And I imagine that they're public transportation routes that are pretty easily accessible.
Yes, yeah. All of them are accessible to public transportation.
So I have a question about the number of children that are served in these centers and how that reflects changes from the past and what you anticipate in the future.
As far as the total number of children that are served in the center, I would have to give you an estimate there because our person is not here. I would say total, and I'm not sure of how many of them are eligible for Head Start, but probably around 100, 150 or something like that, and that's a ballpark figure. Okay. I don't know the exact. And my Head Start director is not here.
And is that a figure that kind of holds steady?
Yes, it holds steady. I do know that they monitor the enrollment very, very closely because the funding for Head Start is based on the enrollment. So it does hold steady. And at the end of the year, funding have not been returned. Otherwise, funding would be returned
right.
if the enrollment was not steady.
Okay, so I'm assuming this affects then about 150 students, our students.
No, not really, because our students are more inclined to want their services here on campus. So I'm not sure of how many of our students use the services that are off-site, but I know that the off-site services are not as popular as the on-site services.
Okay, so there are other people besides our students use these off-site?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Well, good, thank you.
Are there other questions?
I mean, just one more question on that. Did you receive feedback on the level of satisfaction or lack thereof from the students for the off-site centers?
We are having a meeting on Monday, and there will be an assessment instrument developed, and that particular instrument will include the student satisfaction. So that has not been determined yet.
Great. And then will you just, on a going forward, as you get that in place, keep us updated?
Sure.
When you decide what the amount of time you think is appropriate, but I imagine semi-annually is probably fine, but just so it's in front of us.
Definitely.
Thanks.
We did undergo a federal review, and that was approved, but I just don't have the data in front of me right now.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
I have something. I was going to save this for the status report, but I think since we're dealing with the issue of it, it would be best to do it now, if that's okay. Okay, so at Chicago State University, we take pride in the fact that we're family-oriented. We have over 67 student population, 67% of single mothers, and we've even implemented a single mother scholarship and scholarships that help parents with their matriculation here at the university. But the issue is we do not have an on-site daycare and Head Start facility. And if we claim to say that we care, and if enrollment, retention, and graduation is truly our focus, then it would only make sense to do whatever we can to bring the daycare and Head Start facility back to campus. I've spoken to students directly who were able to take advantage of the facility when it was in the Robinson University. And they spoke of it not only making their lives easier, but assisting them when it came to their matriculation here. It not only increased punctuality and attendance to classes, but it also eased the minds of many students who know that their children were just moments away. It's easier for any student or parent not to worry and be able to focus on the task at hand, which ultimately is graduation, when they're not worrying about, I need to leave class early because I have to get there before this time, or I know I'm going to be late because I can only drop them off at this time. Even though we do have the off-site centers, it really isn't much of an option because they might as well choose any other option. And when it comes to our students, it's ideal for us to consider that maybe just our students should have a location where their children can be and not have to worry about children from here, from there, you know. And there's also, with the two home centers, anytime you incorporate two home centers, it always poses the possibility of legal liabilities because anything can happen in an environment like that. For those of you on the board who don't know, I was able to take some time with Dr. Giss, and she showed me the projections, she showed me the location. There are three rooms which they are projecting four, that they're projecting that can hold all the students that are needed. This in no way would interfere as far as sound quality or in the space of students who actually attend the university. There is space set up for an additional playground, this, that, and the other. And I really, really ask that, you know, any upcoming proposals or anything that they suggest be taken to heart, because if, like we say, enrollment, retention, graduation, a lot of students make their decision to come to Chicago State University based on how they will be able to still function as parents. And if we can remove that, we will increase enrollment tenfold. And that's pretty much all I'd like to say about that. But we really, you know, we do have these other options out there, but they're really not options. They're not choices. And the bus lines do run along those ways, but when you also have to walk four blocks to get to the bus and then drop the child off and then run back. It takes away from the overall experience that we are trying to give students, whether they are parents or not.
I totally agree with you, Trustee Kerr. And for that reason, the College of Ed has, as you know, designated some space. Actually, the space does need renovation, mm-hmm. and with renovation comes a need for money. So until the funds are there, I think we're sort of at a standstill, but that is still part of the vision, part of the projection for the College of Ed.
And I agree with Trustee Kerr. We have put in a request from the state for dollars to renovate that area, and that's one of our items on our list in terms of priority. Not only is it the first thing, is one of the best things we can do for students. Second, it provides a teaching research opportunity for students. Third is it makes a more comprehensive college of education. So there's every reason to do it. And we have talked with, I have talked specifically with legislators, and we're trying to get some money swapped, transferred around there where they will defund other projects and allow us to use their funds, use those funds to fund the child care center. Offline, I will share with you which legislators, and we would definitely enjoy support from students. Students have been very successful in helping us on other issues with legislators. But on this one here, this is a natural. If any university in this state should have a child care center, Chicago State should be number one. 70% of our students are female. Close to 70% of those students that are female, no, 70% of our students who are female, 70% of our students are female, and 70% of them have children. So we should be the number one state, the number one university in the state. So I concur. And maybe in offline afterwards, I'd like to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Giss.
You're welcome. Great. Well, we look forward to hearing more on that topic as we go along, because it sounds like it's on everybody's mind.
Okay. All right. Now I will move to the action item. Actually, the action item involves requesting the board's approval for a Head Start Governance Advisory Board. Actually, this advisory board, which also comprises a parent policy committee, is called for in the Head Start Act, as well as the performance standards that are set forth for Head Start. This advisory board is needed in order to continue the operations of the Head Start project, and also there is a grant related to it, so it's required that we have this advisory board in place. So you have before you a resolution that approves the advisory board, and also attached to that resolution is the organizational structure that shows the administrative and the organizational operations as far as the board is concerned. On one side, you will see the parent policy committee in the organizational chart, and on the other side, you will see the governance advisory board. So the College of Education presents this resolution and asks for your consideration for approval.
So, Dr. Giss, I remember I feel like I'd approved this once before. Is this just a slight revision then? Is that what it is?
All right, several things. At the time that we asked for your approval, it was a preliminary approval before the Federal Review Board came out, and they were out about two weeks ago. And this was to make sure that we were in compliance. But the approval also required not only the chair's signature, the chair of the Board of Trustees, but the secretary's signature, and that's specifically stated in the performance standards. So even though you approved it on April 14th, we're submitting it. It had to be submitted for full board approval, and that's what we're asking.
Got it. I'm clear.
Any questions? I would entertain a motion to approve the resolution.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Harris. Okay, next is update on enrollment and retention. Dr. Watson?
Yes. I'm going to ask Cherise Sidney to come forward. This is a very brief report in terms of enrollment, retention, graduation. Let me state, this will be my last time that I make this report, because next time it will be made by the Vice President for enrollment, retention, and graduation. I've served in this capacity for about 6 months, and I'm quite pleased to transition it to the new Vice President. Her name is Angela Henderson, and she will be a very welcomed addition to our family. So she will make the report next. I've asked, but just very quick, our enrollment is up in the past, our retention is up, and our graduation rate is definitely going to be up. Cherie, Ms. Sidney, could you make some basics, provide
sure.
The basics?
Good morning, Board. For the record, my name is Cherie Sidney. I'm the Director of Enrollment Management. Just wanted to report on just some statistics. In terms of our freshman applications, they are definitely up, and admitted students for freshmen are up by 14%. Overall admits for transfer freshmen, for transfer and freshmen, are up by 10%. We are definitely on track to make our projected goals. While the numbers are up, what we're doing right now, we're taking some very aggressive steps to get those students from admitted status to enrolled status. And what we've done in collaboration with the colleges and the enrollment management offices is create a campaign called Cougar Start U. Cougar Start U is designed to touch the students and the parents earlier, as well as get them enrolled earlier. Our first rollout for this program is with the College of Arts and Sciences and the College of Business, and we are actually inviting students and their parents on campus next week, hosting a meet and greet, just collaboratively working to get them enrolled, and we will do that with each of the colleges once a month. In terms of graduation, our projected six-year graduation rate for the six-year cohort is 20%, so we are very excited about that. The numbers may go up, but right now we're at the 20% rate.
The last time we hit 20% was 1989. So you might say that this is a moment of celebration at the university at this coming graduation. Cherie, let me ask you a question. In terms of with the new freshmen that are coming in, are we taking students through an interview process now for the first time?
We are doing that, a pilot program with that, and we are using that interview process specifically with the University College students. University College admits, the applications have gone up 12%. That's huge, that's huge. So what we're doing is we're making that process more competitive for the students. We are not only looking at ACTs, but we're looking at GPAs, we're looking at class rank. We're asking students to write a personal statement, provide a couple of letters of recommendation, and then we are bringing them in for an interview with the freshman dean and her advisors. And I believe the freshman dean will also be including some of the faculty members, and they will be interviewing the students. So yes.
Usually what would happen is that enrollment, registration would take place in August, and that's when we, in most instances, would see the student for the first time. What we're doing now is we're saying, we want to see you. We want you to apply like a regular university. You're going to come in for an interview. We're going to, and it's, so we're adding more variables as to what we're going to look at before we admit you. And we're using faculty. I had the opportunity to go out to a couple of high schools to actually recruit. And what I noticed is that students are identifying what college they want to go into. So what we did was we said, you know, working with Sharice Sidney and her staff, we said, well, let's set up some situations where the music department can actually interview these students. And talking with some of the faculty, like the faculty in the music department, they were saying that all of a sudden a student would show up in August or September saying, I'm in the music department, and they would be saying, what? How'd you, you know? Now, students will get a chance to meet our faculty before they enroll, and our faculty will get a chance to meet them. And I believe that when students meet our faculty, if they were trying to make a decision between going to Columbia and Chicago State or U of I and Chicago State, if we get them, if we give them the opportunity to engage our faculty, they're going to make the decision to come to Chicago State. And I must say, it's going to also allow us to make a decision whether or not we want some of these students. There will be a filter set up. And we're going, and we're working with Dr. Green, and Dr. Green and the admissions office are working close together. Dr. Green, I believe you and your staff are interviewing all of the freshmen that are that's about how many freshmen?
All of the university and college.
And that's about how many ballpark?
Our target enrollment is going to be capped at 200 students.
So we have never done that before, where we've interviewed 200. Well, that's what we're going to target. So we may interview 300 or 400 to get to that. And it's going to be interviews over the phone. It's going to be interviews in person. We are encouraging people to bring in their mother and their father or whoever the individual is that is sponsoring or supporting them. Because our research tells you that you have a better chance of succeeding in college if you have a support system behind you. So we're changing the model just a little bit.
And just to add to that, we sort of have to, because the pool for UC students right now is 666 students. That's huge. That's huge to provide the services that the faculty provide to ensure their success. So we have to cap that.
And how many University College students do we currently have?
Dr. Green? Last year we admitted 230.
So we're going to actually be a little bit smaller in that than the next year's cohort.
Yes.
We're going to be smaller there, but we're going to go up in other areas.
If there's a pool of 600, then it's only about 1 in 3 that will actually be admitted through that program. Yes. Okay.
You have a sense of the percentage of applications, whether it's gone up or not, just generally speaking, not UC, but just general.
Yes.
Whether that's moved up or down in recent years.
Percentages of applications, total applications has gone up 10%. Well, wait, no. You're asking about just applications, whether we've admitted them or denied them?
Right.
4%.
4%. Is there a thought on whether you want to see that number increase, or are you happy with it, the number, because you feel as though the pool is strong enough for the number you get?
We're looking to increase applications because we've denied a high percent of students. Yeah. So while we're looking to increase the number of applications, we're looking to increase the number of applications for qualified students.
I really want to commend you on this pilot because, you know, one thing that we might not have touched on is the fact that you're adding value to the quality of the program. And, you know, the fact that, you know, they would have to interview, there has to be some form of letters of recommendation. This means they have to go through something to even come and be considered. And, you know, even though we are thinking about bringing more people in, this, that, and the other, when a student feels that they've earned something, they put more effort into it. And while it may be a little less than previous, the 200 versus 230, this process could increase you know, the things that we're looking for when we talk about accreditation, you know, grade point averages, attendance, graduation rate, and things like that. So I really am in support of this, and I think this is the better way to move forward with where we're trying to take the university.
We are doing small things such as, like, in the admission letter that we send out to the students. We're putting a little statement in there, and we're telling the students that we have a
standard of dress.
Yeah, we have a standard of dress at the university. And for the first time, trustees, students are being told there's a standard of dress at the university. And what we're letting them know is that pants below the waist, pants below the
yes.
buttocks. It's not acceptable.
I got it.
Yes.
I didn't know how to say it.
Can I just say quickly, there's also, it's like an unwritten campaign that student government, along with the African American Male Resource Center, is doing, and it's a new slogan. It's called Man Up, Pants Up. So, you know, if we can get young men to identify with the fact right. that, mm-hmm. you know, you're more respected, you're more desired, you're more appreciated if you carry yourself a certain way. Because, see, the thing is when someone is attached to something because they think it gives them something else, you have to replace it with something to change the behavior. So, you know, as a collective of students, we're trying to change that as well.
And we are targeting, we are surgically and selectively going after students who have a strong academic preparation. Okay, and we're going after these individuals. They have 26, 27 ACTs. We're going after them with their parents, and we're saying this is the place for you. So we want to have a diverse student body. We want to have a student body that has young men and young ladies from 15 all the way up to 28 to 30, all right? And that's where we're going to find our strength. Our strength is going to be in a balance of that. It has to be balanced. And so I want to thank Cherise Sidney and her staff. This will probably be the last time you see Cherise Sidney sitting in that chair under that capacity, because come June, we will have
a
new director of admissions, and his name is?
Matthew Harrison.
And he comes from?
Drexel University.
And he has a wealth of experience and knowledge in admissions. He brings management tools of how an admissions office should be run, how you can do projections. And we are quite excited about his joining our team. So I want to...